exploited publisher that make $1 million.
Sure, yeah.
I always do.
Yeah. No, this kind of stuff doesn't make that kind of money. But at any rate, was there a particular area you were interested in?
I'd like to talk, well, you were talking about your plans, what you wanted to publish and write.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what you said in the beginning about your book selling 70,000 copies, you could explain that a little more, how you started writing that book and
mm-hmm.
why you wanted to write that, for whom, how it came about and what you've been doing since.
Yeah. Well, without making it too long, I think that ever since I was a child, I liked the process of writing.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the process of sitting with pen in hand and trying to make up little stories. And I think for a writer, it almost has to be there. It almost has to be innate. Go back, Storck and my people weren't physically writers or
mm-hmm.
word processors like I am today. But but my grandfather was a medicine man, and a lot of people will tell you that. Frankly, a lot of people will tell you that. And to me, if somebody tells me my father or so-and-so was a chief or a princess or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I accept it for what it is that they believe. But then if you check closely, a lot of it is dreaming or idealization.
Yeah, wishful thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, but in my case, several people from my reserve have done oral histories, and one of them was Pat Nigawan. She was doing anthropology studies at the University of Manitoba, and she's from my reserve. She also was the host of a local, this whole area, Northwestern Ontario, CBC, our Canadian Broadcasting System radio station.
Mm-hmm.
She did a radio show.
Oh, yeah.
Was on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she did an oral history of our family histories for that reserve. And she was, basically, she was looking for a white man in my family tree. My Indian name is Shabugizik. Shabugizik through the day,
mm-hmm.
that's what
mm-hmm.
my Indian name means. And so at any rate, and Pat and I, since we're the same age, Shabugizik approximately,
mm-hmm.
means through the day.
Mm-hmm.
That was my dad's family hunting name,
mm-hmm.
his father's name, Shabugizik.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And we belong to the bear Dodem.
Oh, yeah.
The word Dodem, as you know, is an Ojibwe word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even Claude Levi Strauss
mm-hmm.
attested to that, so it must be true,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. You think you need that authority?
Yeah. So in any case, as I was saying, this woman packed and did an oral history, a family
mm-hmm.
genealogical study. Because we're rivals, she was a bit competitive, right? See who's smarter, that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am. She thinks she is. Anyway, and she was trying to find a white man in my family tree.
Mm-hmm.
She went back about 5 generations. That's as far back world
mm-hmm.
as people
mm-hmm.
can remember. She couldn't find any in my family tree.
Mm-hmm.
And she was quite mad about that, because immediately, 1 generation back in her family tree, there was a Scots fur trader.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't like that very much. But what we did find is that in my family tree, my grandfather on my father's side, his name was Guo David. And what that exactly means, I'm not sure. But I found an Ojibwe word called Ankodavanek,
mm-hmm.
and Godavid is a part, a morpheme of Ankodavanek,
mm-hmm.
and Ankodavanek means to bring together.
Wow.
Yeah. And another interpretation that when I was talking to other people speak the language, Ankodavanek means that term people use nowadays in English, all my relations.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because as I was...
Lakota say mitakriyamsin, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in any case, you know, and you think about it, the words, you know, see,
mm-hmm.
it sounds
mm-hmm.
similar, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have general inflection patterns that are the same. So in any case, so when I say that I didn't write, my parenting, my grandfather, he had two jobs for our family hunting group. See, up to the 1930s, the late 1930s, the Ojibwe around the Lac Seul area, they didn't live on one reserve. Mm-hmm. The reserve boundaries had been set up since 1873, as you can see on that map. It's 49,000 acres. But people still lived all over in their family hunting groups, an area of, different anthropologists have figured, well, Paul Drummond Lake, and we were talking about it when I was taking this course 2 years ago, and we figured anywhere between 400 to 600, 700 square miles for family hunting band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is, as I remember, I was telling him, was that my father's trap line or his hunting area extended as far as he could go comfortably in one day in a northerly direction, an easterly direction, a northerly and an easterly, and then
a circle.
A rough circle.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be about 20-25 miles a day on the average. So 20 times 20 would be 400 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
So anything over between 400 or 600, maybe up to 800 if it was a big family, if you had sons, right? So anyway, the way I figure, when I was a child, our family hunting group, the Shabugizik, so to speak, lived on the western edge of that particular reserve, about 30 miles west of that area. But our meeting place every summer, for different reasons, ceremonies, Feast of the Dead, the Ojibwe did have a form of Feast of the Dead. We had the White Dog Ceremonial Feast. The white dog or a small dog was used as a replacement for a bear, because the bear was more powerful sign, or a dotem, or a clan, if people use the word clan. But I don't think clan is particularly accurate for the type of social structure we have.
Mm-hmm.
People are just trying to make a comparison, I think. So in any case, my grandfather had two jobs, as far as I can determine from doing my own oral history. In 1974, I began writing about the history of my area through undergraduate studies, University of Waterloo. And I actually began a master's program at York in the fall of 1984 after I graduated from Waterloo. And that was the focus of my research, was the religious philosophy and ethno-history of the Lac Seul Indians. That was my focus of my research. So I've gone extensively through Anglican Church archives, Roman Catholic Church archives, Hudson Bay Archives, which are in Winnipeg, and in Ottawa, the microfiche.
Yeah.
I've gone extensively from 1803 up to the present time. And there are a lot of references to the type of social structure, the kind of game and fish that the Indians had at that time. Yeah. So it's really quite a useful document. Charles Bishop, I think, in his book, The Northern Ojibwe and the Fur Trade, he actually uses a lot of references to the Lac Seul Band, my band. So if you want information about the Lac Seul Band, where I'm from, you can find it in Charles Bishop's book. He claims to be writing primarily about Osnaburg area, Pickle Lake, but in actual fact, a lot of his footnotes are from the Lac Seul Indians. And talking about medicine men or shamans or magical workers, the Osnaburg band were reputedly afraid of the Lac Seul medicine men, because the Lac Seul medicine men were powerful. There's an actual reference to that. But in any case, my grandfather had the two jobs. One was to drum Medea Gaelin. You've probably seen the word Medeoan in different anthropological, sociological texts, and that might be accurately the way you say it in a certain area, but I'm not sure where. But where I come from, the pronunciation is Medea Gaelin. Medea, short, gay. approximately,
mm-hmm.
might be
mm-hmm.
an H there.
Mm-hmm.
Me, de, e, ge, when.
Oh, yeah.
That's a more pronunciation from
mm-hmm.
where I come
mm-hmm.
from. And this referred to the ritual act of drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of the drumming was to Anko Davin, was to bring all the
was
relations together.
It didn't need to be.
Mm-hmm. It didn't need to be. It
but
was
it's a large drum?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
They call it Gusens, the drum that they use, and they
mm-hmm.
called it a little boy. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
just a little
mm-hmm.
a little hand drum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it could also, in some cases, I've seen reference to a water drum as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was either a handheld drum that was flat,
mm-hmm.
or a little drum that had water
mm-hmm.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in American Anthropologists, in different volumes, I recall some of the Ojibwe medicine men from the Fort Frances area, Eagle Lake area, which are all in a three
mm-hmm.
area, referring to it as the little boy,
oh,
yeah. Gruzes. I can't spell it, but Gruzes, and
mm-hmm.
it means small boy.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you will see that somewhere along the way. That was one of his jobs. The other job was basically to bring people together. But the most important job was he was the keeper of the drum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was the keeper of that particular aspect of what I call Anishinaabe Ojibwe. See, Medeo Ojibwe is just one ritual act or process within the context of Ojibwe religious philosophy and religion. And what I call that is Anishinaabe Ojibwe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the
overall
concept
of
mm-hmm.
the worldview, so
oh, yeah.
to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had other kinds of medicine, and
mm-hmm.
I haven't really concentrated in finding out what those were. But John M. Cooper has a text from the Catholic University,
mm-hmm.
and he refers to at least six types of medicine men.
Mm-hmm.
The Wabanoper one, the fire,
mm-hmm.
the fire maker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He lists six: the Medea Geoni,
mm-hmm.
the medicine, the,
mm-hmm.
the drumming man,
mm-hmm.
Mishkikiuni, the actual medicine man,
mm-hmm.
Mishkikiuni. And I don't think it's surprising, but a lot of the reference to this type was to male. Because, as you know,
mm-hmm.
the Northern Ojibwe were patrilineal, male-oriented,
mm-hmm.
male-dominated type of, if you, society is not the proper word, but grouping.
Mm-hmm.
And
in your writing or so, do you feel that in a way you would be continuing along those lines?
I said what?
In your writing today, do you feel that you said the functions that your grandfather had?
Oh, yeah.
Keeping the people together or so.
Okay.
Did you see
yeah.
writing today as a form of
yeah,
trying to
okay.
do the same in a different
time? Yeah, thanks for bringing me back to that. That's the line I was trying to follow.
Mm-hmm.
When my understanding is when the medicine man, the medicine man, in particular, brought people together, then he part of his job was in bringing people together was to tell stories as
mm-hmm.
part of the process. When
yeah.
he was drumming,
oh,
he
yeah.
was actually singing
oh, yeah.
and telling stories as he was doing his act. And but it depended on people could tell from the beat and the sound
mm-hmm.
of the drum what it was for.
Oh yeah.
Like I remember this old man from the community of telling me. There was a certain beat, certain
mm-hmm.
sound that it meant something. I didn't say bad but something. It wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't supposed to come. It was just some kind of
mm-hmm.
sign. It was
mm-hmm.
it was telling there was something bad going on.
Mm-hmm.
Something tragic had happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember he made sound of the drum and orally, and he said. Dum, 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 that sound and he knew this old, when I interviewed this old man, he was in his early 80s, 82, back in 84, and he remembered, because my grandfather died at an early age, he remembered my grandfather starting out learning, apprenticing to be a medicine man from an old man. And there, my grandfather quoted that he was the last of four practicing medicine men, and they all died in the late, in the mid-40s, I believe. I have to check my notes, but... So I personally never knew my grandfather, but I heard through my father, and my father was quite old, much older than my mother, because my father had two wives, and at the same time for a while, you know, but later than them, he lived with my mother after a while. But anyway, part of my grandfather's job apparently was to narrate stories that went along with the songs and the chants that he was making. And obviously, we didn't have the syllabics you saw last night in our workshop. We didn't have those forms of writing then. But and I don't think my grandfather was the one that was responsible for taking care of the Birch Park graphic. That was another type of what you'd call him, another role in Anishinaabe Educare. Part of his purpose was to remember and keep alive stories. My father had a lot of stories that he told me as a boy. Personally, this is one of the books I want to publish. There are stories particular to that region.
Would you want to publish them in English or?
Well, I want to publish them in Anishinaabe, but translated into English and
so bilingual
German.
Edition. Huh?
Trilingual.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do. That's one of the books that I definitely want to publish. Probably over 300 pages. And because I speak and remember my language, I want to tell them first, write them down first in that language.
Oh, I see.
I want to use syllabics because it's closer to the sound of my language than actual English alphabet, right? English script. So that's one of the books I want to work on. But I believe that since my grandfather was responsible for keeping alive these stories and the songs, lyrics, memoirs. I think that was in my family tree. It was in my blood, so to speak, and or ancestral memory, or whatever you want to call it. And my father, he had a rich, vast oral history. My father was of the age that he still lived as historically as much as possible, like an old-time Indian. He hunted. He guided for hunters, he fished, commercial fishing, and he also guided fly casting or spin rod casting for tourists. And he was a trapper. That's how my father made a living. And as I was saying, even in the mid-1950s, when I was a child in the early 60s, we did not have this, what I call an evil thing of government just saying, oh, the Indians don't have a sustainable economy. Let's give them welfare money, or the social democrats, whatever that made this possible to have. If you don't have a job, then we have to give you money to survive. I think that's the root cause of all the social crisis in almost every Indian community in this country.
You think it's the
I think it is. I really think it is.
People sit back.
People sit back.
You see,
My father's generation and my reserve was the last working generation.
I see.
The people like my age who don't want to face the crisis or the turmoil of living off the reserve to have a job, they stay back and they live on welfare.
Yeah.
There's nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, they could go trapping, but the price of furs is down. Commercial fishing. They don't know how to market their natural resources. In fact, they're severely limited in their intake or their output of natural resources produce. So people
get discouraged. There's an ecological side to it.
Yeah, and also government controls and restrictions.
Yeah.
That negates and put people putting out an effort. It's too damn hard, to make a living. However, in my father's generation and generations before for our area, you didn't really have a choice. You had to.
Sure.
So I like to claim this, and I don't know if it's really true, but I like to claim that my father was among the last working Indians.
What about yourself?
I'm a working Indian,
work.
but because... obviously the ethic of hard work and producing was part of our culture.
Yeah.
I think I believe it was, and it's in part of my thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just transformed it into an urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a workaholic. I work like a dog. I have my little job. I sit on numerous non-profit boards, and I'm involved in a business venture and trying to finish one of my books. So in any case, I think the fact that my father, my grandfather was a storyteller, a drum keeper, and kept the story alive while he was doing his drumming, bringing the people together. And the fact that my father, even though he didn't take up that way anymore, he became a practicing Christian. I think that stayed with me, and it became, when I learned how to write with a pencil and later with a typewriter, now a computer, that's in me, the fact of liking to, you know, my stupid long stories, like the one about to get the hunter. I like stories like that. It's in my mind to like...
The one about the railroad.
Yeah, the railroad hunter, yeah, that one. So anyway, so the fact of the matter is, I think it's innate. I think it in a way it has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's difficult for me to go and find somebody on the street who doesn't have it in their history somewhere, or doesn't have the innate desire for it. I think it's difficult to turn somebody into a writer or a creator of written documents. I'm not obviously a biologist, whatever you call that type of science, but I think it has to be there, at least it is for my case.
Mm-hmm.
And how that led to Indians Don't Cry. Ever since I was in grade school, I liked, as I said, the process of writing, and even math. I like math. I'm not very solid in math, but I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I like working with paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was a paper pusher. And even today, I'm
a paper tiger pusher.
Yeah, and I'm a paper pusher. So I liked all that process, and I liked telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that girls like me when you're funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like you, and you can make them laugh. And so, so I live for it. You know, I think it's part of the reason Renata likes me, because I make her laugh and Dee her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so, and then if people like. People react emotionally to things you either say or write. So then, when you can't be with people in person, then the natural way to extend your output, your outreach to people, is to write it out.
Do you have any specific people in mind that you would rather say write for Native people or the public at large or whoever is interested? Or
no, I think it's whatever comes out. In the past, at the Indians Don't Cry stage, I didn't plan out that stuff. I mean, I didn't say, look, I'm going to write Indians Don't Cry, that story you have. I didn't purposely set out at some point in my life, here's a roadmap, here's my mission.
Mm-hmm.
One day I was sitting, and the different things that you examined in the story were in my consciousness, right, my experience. My father and mother were not drinkers and alcoholics, but I knew lots of people who were. So I wrote that story because it came out of me. And in fact, most of the material in Indians Don't Cry is first draft. Because the guys who came to see me in Toronto in 1976 were not professional editors or publishers. They were basically people who wanted to start a press. They were, in a sense, idealists or dreamers. And they thought they saw a market for Aboriginal new contemporary literature or poetry or whatever. And in fact, through a contact of mine in Toronto, one of the gentlemen came to see me one day, said, George, we've got money to put out a book. This fellow that you know says you have some poems and stories. So I gave him a box about that size, and just stuck by it written since I was in high school and sometimes before. And basically they selected that material that's in that book. I have other material from that period that if you read it, there'd be nothing to indicate it's by an Indian person,
mm-hmm.
or it wasn't about Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been just a love story about my first girlfriend, but
mm-hmm.
it didn't mention that I was Indian,
mm-hmm.
she was French Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So they purposely, because they recognized a market gap somewhere, they
uh-huh.
selected that material.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
That's fine with me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you get native artists and writers
yeah.
who say, I think they have two positions. Some say it must be native, and there's something specific to native writing and native art because
mm-hmm.
it comes from a different
yeah.
perspective. And others say, I want to be a writer or an artist, full stop.
Well,
and not come under a category, sort of an ethnic
yeah.
category.
Well, I think that that's fine if people feel that. I
mm-hmm.
think if people feel that they that strongly about what they do, then they're entitled to that. I have friends who feel that way. For myself, I'm not that dogmatic about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just exist. I just do what I want to do, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't like what I do. That's fine. So other people
mm-hmm.
do. Because in the end, you know, we just, you know, as Ricky Nelson used to say, sing. You know, we just please ourselves in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And if I please myself, and I'm a fairly decent person,
mm-hmm.
I don't go around harming people, most of the stuff will eventually won't harm anybody, and maybe it'll help a few people,
mm-hmm.
maybe it'll give somebody an insight, maybe yourself,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
people you reach through you, or you know,
mm-hmm.
if you can use any of this material or
mm-hmm.
any of my writings, then that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I can't... No, I can't go. I can't say this is only for Indians. This is only
oh, yeah.
for Germans.
Okay.
This
mm-hmm.
is only for the true Indian artist or the true
mm-hmm.
Indian writer.
Mm-hmm.
If people outside want to make those kind of arbitrary
mm-hmm.
limitations or choices,
mm-hmm.
well, it's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was just trying to remember. I have a copy of the play October Stranger. I don't think I have it with me.
October Stranger.
You never saw that? It's
no.
a play.
Uh-huh.
I wrote that as well.
I heard about that, but I've never seen it.
I might have it.
Did
actually.
They ever...
it was published, yeah.
Oh, and was it ever performed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was produced in Toronto and Southern Ontario in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was also in Monaco in the fall of 1977.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember my saying so, but... No, I sent it off. I'm
trying to do an artists in schools project later in the year,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of my evidence.
Oh yeah.
My work was my play.
Oh yeah.
It's a one-act play, and it was produced by published by Chimo.
Oh yeah. Is Chimo, is that a native publication?
No.
No. It just sounds a bit like that. Huh?
Oh yeah. I mean,
well,
if you want to do native stuff, use a native name. It makes sense, right?
Is
it's
Chimo,
actually
is
Eskimo, or anyway.
Is
yeah.
that...
friendly or something like that. Yeah.
That is in Toronto?
As I said earlier, they're defunct now.
Mm-hmm.
They went belly up.
Okay.
Yeah.
But maybe one can find it in some library somewhere.
It's in the most public... It's there's a book of English language books. What do they
mm-hmm.
call it? It's in there. It's
mm-hmm.
listed in there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the company's out of commission...
That was 1977.
1978. The play was produced in 1977.
Oh, I see. And then it was published
in 1978. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that a full-length play?
No, a one-act play.
Mm-hmm.
There was the World Amateur Theatre Contest in Monaco of that year.
Mm-hmm.
And Theatre Canada, which doesn't exist anymore, for I don't know whatever reasons, were selected this play for a stranger
mm-hmm.
as Canada's representative that year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, to me, that doesn't really not mean much to me because I'm not into, I don't know much about social structure, what do you call that?
I don't think...
Class structure. Well, I know about it.
Sure.
But it doesn't preoccupy me, like...
No, I see. You don't want to climb the ladder.
No,
so, okay,
really, yeah.
Okay.
I just want to do what I want to do. That's
yeah, okay.
basically it,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But still, it's good.
Yeah. For me, like, I'm 38 now, and I've got dreams. I like I said, I want to publish some of my own books
mm-hmm.
in the future. my first book is going to be a follow-up to Indians Don't Cry.
Mm-hmm. Stories.
But it'll be all autobiographical stories.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
It'll be prose, poetry, a bit of academic information,
mm-hmm.
from approximately the time I was born to 1980 when my father died.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be hopefully the most evocative, sensitive, and hopefully well-written material of my memories during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Material that hasn't been used previously in Indians Don't Cry or Up to the Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tentatively, I was calling it God Is Not a Mennonite, but I don't think that's enough of a...
What made you choose that title?
Well, at various points in my life, from the time I was 15 to the time I was 23, I was quite evangelical Christian. I was a part of evangelical Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't drink or smoke to this day. I never drank in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
No Indians across this country are,
it's part of colonialism. Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I've never had a drink in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Just that fact alone.
You never even tried it.
Never even wanted to.
Why did you not try it? Because you saw what it did?
I saw what it did to people from my reserve.
And did your parents teach
you? My parents didn't drink.
Oh,
my father had a beer sometime when he was older, but
mm-hmm.
in my childhood they didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I saw what it did to my family, my uncle and his family,
mm-hmm.
and the people who my family's, our group that we hunted and fished with. I saw what it did to their families.
Yeah.
And
actually, I drink as part of our culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Socially,
yeah.
But when we were in California, after about a month or two, I just stopped it.
Yeah.
It turned me right off to see what it did amongst
Native
people.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing about anything else, right?
Yeah.
You know, cocaine now, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you see what it does, but for some reason, I just never became.
Mm-hmm.
I think a large part of it, between the time I was 14 to the time I was 23, 9 years or so,
mm-hmm.
I was a devout practicing evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even go out on dates during that time. I had a couple of women friends, but.
Mm-hmm.
And never went to movies, didn't go to dances, like fun dances, saw cops, that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff. Yeah, I never did any of that when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I was out pounding on doors, witnessing for Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
I was a radical the other way, you
mm-hmm.
know. And
how is that now?
I'm not anymore. I'm more interested in my own religious beliefs of my own people.
So not Christian anymore?
No, I don't think so. I respect Christians.
Yeah.
I respect people who want to be.
Sure.
But for myself, unfortunately, I can't. I have a friend of mine. His name is Jim Miner. I really like the man. I like his wife. I like his family. If he were sitting here today talking to us, he could tell us, Jesus is sitting in that chair, George. He's right there. For me, he's right there. And if he believes that, then that's his mindset, that's his philosophy. I say, okay, Jim, I accept that.
Mm-hmm.
If you say so, then.
I think that's all
yeah.
it takes if you burn it down to people. Indian people have known this, but if non-Indians just learn to respect, that would be enough.
Yeah.
If you really respect other people in life, a lot of the bad things that are happening would not be happening.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah, so, and then for the last 5 years, I had an hankering to go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that'll come to pass, but I'm writing the law standard admission exam this December. And
mm-hmm.
I'm lucky.
With which university?
Well, probably a University of Ottawa.
Or Carleton?
No. Carleton doesn't have an undergraduate law degree program. They have
a
graduate law program.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. However, University of Ottawa does have an
mm-hmm.
undergraduate law program.
Mm-hmm.
And but probably I would go to University of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would because
mm-hmm.
I like Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, just 5 hours south of here or
mm-hmm.
so, this great big metropolitan area in St. Paul and Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
What when I think of going to the city, mm-hmm. I think of going to Toronto, which is that much further away. And
that's
the Canadian mindset, right?
Yeah.
Canadian connection. And so be it. You know, I'll mm-hmm. go there. So anyway, I'm working in my files. I must be working on. I have how many books am I working on? I'm not going to show you. I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't have them ready yet. I'm working on my autobiographical fiction.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And yet I fictionalize it as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on my experiences, but it's
mm-hmm.
also fictionalized.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to get sued. And then I'm developing a series of children's stories for my son.
Oh, yeah. How old is he?
He's 8 now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a play called Notes to a Dying Artist
mm-hmm.
by Carl Rae. And then I'm writing, hopefully, my MA thesis within the next year.
That would be...
Ojibwe religion.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing that with what?
Through Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know Parker Dushman?
But from Carlton?
Mm-hmm.
No, not yet.
He's
but I will.
In Canadian studies, but for some time he was coordinator of Native Studies.
Yeah,
I met him 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he's not Native, but I think he's very
well. There aren't that many academic Native Canadians around, as you know, doctors.
Yeah.
What I'm doing is I've done two courses at York graduate
mm-hmm.
courses. And master's level,
mm-hmm.
and I'm attempting to transfer them to Carleton.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
But even if I don't, I'm still going to go ahead and do my
mm-hmm.
study at Carleton anyway. This year, I'm
mm-hmm.
doing a directed reading study of
mm-hmm.
The ethnohistory of the Ojibwe of the Upper Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do this year. And Carrie Abel, who's a professor chairing Native Studies
mm-hmm.
this year,
mm-hmm.
Carrie Abel. That's the name of the professor at Carleton who's
mm-hmm.
chairing Canadian Studies, not Canadian Studies, Native and...
the Native Studies program
Northern
with
studies.
The... Native, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was Parker Dushman doing that 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I might
Carrie
have...
Carrie Abel, yeah.
K-E-R-R-Y. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met her, I think,
yeah.
at a lunch.
She sounds really young, is she?
I don't know.
On the phone, she sounds really young. You know how people's
mm-hmm.
voice of, sometimes
could
below
be. I'm not sure. Sometimes you get...
Let's say, talk to her daughter.
She doesn't sound... 35
really,
or so.
Well,
mm-hmm.
for an
sure,
academic.
That is young, yeah. I write down his name, Parker Dushman. So if you go to Carton or so, contact him.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing him tonight or tomorrow.
Okay, great.
And,
mention that.
He's very much interested in Native writing, too.
Yeah.
And he's... oh, you know Gray Younging?
No.
He's a Native and Chinese
mm-hmm.
background.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes poetry. He had a
mm-hmm.
play also. He's in Ottawa. And another guy that he's together with quite often is Will Pelletier.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie
so,
knows Will. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I met him there
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
If I'm lucky, I'll be seeing him tomorrow
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Well, what happened was
mm-hmm.
I registered by a certain date and
mm-hmm.
and I have sent off my registration fee by mail because the director
mm-hmm.
reading course I didn't have to go in person.
No, I see.
So
mm-hmm.
I haven't heard back. I hope my
mm-hmm.
application went through properly. If it didn't, what I'll have to do is go through the process again.
I can ask Parker
yeah.
whether he can look into that.
Okay.
Huh? Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, but what's going to happen then is next year I have to go for 8 months residency.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's before you finish the
thesis.
Course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you commute on weekends, I guess, huh?
Next year?
Mm-hmm. Or
no,
would you move the whole family?
I'll have to go down there because I'm going to be taking the Canadian Studies course and
mm-hmm.
The Native Studies course. And it meets once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really useful, I found, for my other graduate course to be with your colleagues, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because then
oh,
you
yeah.
discuss items
yeah,
after you prepare different symposiums, you know,
mm-hmm.
together. I mean, I can't do it from here.
No, that's true.
But it's okay. I mean, I moved around, and it's no big
mm-hmm.
deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I like the prospect of doing that next
mm-hmm.
year. Yeah.
Oh, good.
But then I am still thinking about law school. So I've told my wife, once I finish my MA, and I intend to, I want to either go to law school, or if I can get into a doctoral program, I'm going to investigate that. If I did proceed with my doctoral
program. The doctoral program, I think, would be really good, because there are so very, very few native PhDs in the humanities.
That's right.
I don't know whether I told you this, but I 2 years ago I was also in Regina at Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, and they've got their own English department, right? And I talked to them then, and they got interested in what I was doing, and so this time I had a hearing that they had an assistant professorship advertised. They had lots of applications, and they gave me grilling, and they offered me that job, you know. And there's still some financial things that have to be solved, because...
But you might come to that?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be nice.
Yeah, for one... Yeah. Now, the way we plan it is as a guest professor for 1 year, and my contract back in Germany is limited.
I've got
less than 2 years left, and that's the end. That's probably the end of Native Studies in Germany. But, so... We'll give that a try. The question is whether with a whole family or so we can swing it, and financially, because kids will have to complete their school year, and the salary is it's very low compared at least to what I'm earning right now, which is good.
So I'm not sure what
but
I'll
it's
be
sad
doing,
that white people should be getting these jobs. They should be for Indians.
Well, we're not ready. I mean, we're still struggling
with alcoholism. Yeah, that's right. That's what people there said too, and they said, we hope you come.
Yeah, we're struggling with alcoholism, social upheaval, cultural, finding ourselves culturally, you know.
Yeah.
Over time, people will, you know, rise up and, and go through the process. But that's what I was saying. I talked to Nan about it before, and she's all for it, but we are in the process of slowly starting our own university college here. Whatever I do elsewhere, I'm going to come back here, because I like this area. I like the physical environment of Thunder
Bay. It's home,
Well, close.
Yeah, I understand.
My heartland,
I understand that. I feel the same about this region that I told the story about last night. Very strongly so. I don't live there right now. My wife is from that region too, and it hurts not to be there.
Yeah.
But there's no job.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Hope that.
Thank you.
Some use.